Hi, you're listening to Go See a Show, the Off-Off-Broadway podcast. Last time playwright Matthew Freeman was on the podcast, we were discussing his excellent play, Why We Left Brooklyn, a pretty naturalistic view of a young couple at their going-away party. This time around, we're discussing a very different play. That play is The Listeners. It's currently running at The Brick, and it's a thought-provoking, unique experience that I was really glad to get to talk to Matt about. So, here he is. Take a listen.
Well, let's just like get into it then.
Before, okay, let's
like,
talk about it. Yeah,
this
yeah.
sounds like we could probably just like riff on too much stuff, and then like we wouldn't have anything left to talk about on the mic. So,
all right, cool, let's do it.
Welcome back.
Thank
to
you.
Go See a Show. Just give us your name on the mic, just so we got it.
Okay, Matt Freeman.
You might recognize that voice from Why We Left Brooklyn.
Yes.
Playwright and playwright this time of
The Listeners.
We're at The Brick. And this is not Why We Left Brooklyn.
Very different.
At all.
Yes.
And so this is only the second piece of yours that I've seen, and it's almost like at the other end of the spectrum in terms of like style.
Yeah.
Is this like a thing that you challenged yourself to do, to write in this like almost Pinter-esque sort of absurdity, or was it?
I think it's almost
what came out.
I think it's almost the other way around, which is that Why We Left Brooklyn is atypical for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Why We Left Brooklyn is me saying, let's try writing a normal play. And then...
I'm going to like your other work then. Because I loved Why We Left Brooklyn, but like this is so much more my speed. It's my sort of style, like what I gravitate toward it personally.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, I've written a lot of different styles. It's sort of like I like the kind of broad range and scope of styles. Am I being picked up or how am I doing?
Yeah, I'm just making sure we're getting it.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm sure this will all be... spliced or not, maybe it'll
no
oh
man
sound
we
like.
do raw audio. That's how awesome. That's how Go See a Show
so
works.
This is, we both looked at the camera together, so
makes for great radio.
Yeah, hope so. You know, I've written plays that are, three-act large comedies, and I've written the, you know, Why We Left Brooklyn, which is very, very straightforward. Some of my favorite plays of mine are, like, I wrote an adaptation of Bluebeard, which is sort of a, like this, has a lot of language, and, you know, I kind of move around in style. Some of my favorite, like, let's say, like, musical artists, like a Bob Dylan or whatever, they kind of do the American Songbook. Like, he kind of... Like
the new records, all Sinatra.
It's Sinatra, right? And then he did songs Jerry Garcia taught him, and then you know, Bring It All Back Home is basically like him doing beat poets, and so there's a he, you know, I like, you know, just letting your influences be what you are a little bit, and I like this kind of work. Yeah, I would say that Brooklyn is, if that's the first play of mine you're exposed to, it's actually very different than my usual stuff, which is probably more like this, although I've written things that are much more overt comedies and things like that, too. This is a little more opaque than your average bear.
You know, speaking of letting your influences shine, I mean, obviously, there's the... I don't mean to hit it over the head with it, but it's just very Pinter.
Yeah.
Very, very Pinter. And then we've got radishes and carrots abound, so...
right, it's got that Beckett.
And turnips, so if you aren't hearing your Godot there, you got to read Godot again.
yeah, exactly. No, it definitely has... It wears all those influences on its sleeve. I think it is... I think if you just don't fight that stuff, what is uniquely you, or at least how I feel, is that the piece of it that's uniquely me will come through anyway. You know, I don't think it... I think it sounds like those things, but I think it's clearly not those things.
Well, and that's... I like that you say it sounds like those things, but it doesn't, because, like, it has its own sonic nature.
Yeah.
Which is what... I turned on the mic when I did, because we started to talk about sound.
Yeah,
and I was
yeah.
No, wait, we gotta catch that, because, like, that's my world as well. Like, amateur sound designer, I make a podcast for a reason.
Yeah.
Like, the sound of it was very unique, and I almost feel like your director... picked up on that as well in how he staged it, because he restricted our visual.
Yes, he did.
So is there anything you can give us like a little bit about the process of this particular production
and
your involvement with the director's vision of your work?
Yeah. I mean, this is the second collaboration that Michael Gardner and I have had. The first one was a piece called Brandywine Distillery Fire, although it had other iterations. And that piece was very language-based, primarily very language-based. There wasn't a lot of this. But we did force the actors to use a cadence that wasn't natural. What they had done was we had them read everything backwards and then had them speak forwards the way that sounds. I don't know how to describe that otherwise, but we jokingly called it the new naturalism, you know, as a joke. But, you know, so Michael likes to sort of toss complications into the room, and I think Michael likes to break things to see what happens, you know. So his concept, well, the original idea was that we wanted to work together. We didn't have a script. We did some improvisations with some actors to sort of bring out some language, find some stuff, this cast. They gave me some starting points, script stuff.
So you started with these six people?
Well, Heather Cunningham, who plays Augusta, was a late addition because Augusta as a character was a late addition. And Jay Leibowitz was a later addition, but not that much later. So yeah, these were the cast that helped develop it. Yep. And then I just took it away and made a play out of it. We did a reading, a kind of a bare bones reading of a version of this in October. And Michael, you know, this is part of the Brick Resident Artist Program, and Michael's the artistic director of the Brick. So he sort of saw this as part of that. So it wound up being, this two-week run. And somewhere in the middle of this process, Michael announced to us that he wanted to do this, which is, you know, basically the set is all four walls surrounds the play, and the audience watches the play through basically little rectangular slots or one-way mirrors or, you know, primarily through these little slots. It's a very limited view. And, you know, that idea evolved. At first, I think it was like he just wanted, like, pinholes, but that was, like, I think physically too hard. You know, so, and yeah, I mean, I kind of heard that and said, okay, that's going to be really interesting. It could be super cool. It could be very difficult. We'll see. And the play does what it does. And then I feel like the direction sort of interacts with the play, you know.
It does feel that way. I mean, one of the things that I really liked about the restrictions mm-hmm. of the, how you see the piece was that it, I had a very unique perspective.
Yeah.
In that, I like to tell people, like, one of the reasons I have a really hard time watching film and television, when people are like, why haven't you seen whatever? Mm-hmm. It's like, because I just, sitting in front of a screen, like, sometimes it bothers me because my perspective is forced. Mm-hmm. And I like in theater that, you know, if I decide I want to look at the person next to me and see how they laugh, or look at the character way out to the side when everyone else is watching what's happening center stage, I can do that. Like, you have this sort of agency in how it works. Mm-hmm. In this, you kind of, I kind of got to direct my own movie as I looked around to see, you know, I would hear someone speaking, but be watching the other person's reaction and not be able to see the person who's talking.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I just found that a really interesting way to engage with a play that's about, in many ways, to my hearing of it, the sound of it and what these people are saying. And again, the play is called
yeah.
The Listeners.
Yeah,
and there's
yeah.
this sonic something out there. Can you talk a little bit about what that sound is?
You know,
even in an opaque way, because I'm sure as a player, you don't want to give it away,
it's
right?
It's kind of hard to describe. I mean, I think like anything, I think an aesthetic is very hard to describe. You know, like the taste, very hard to describe. You know, what sounds good to me, what feels right to me in a scene. And I think I like surprise. I like when things kind of come to you that you weren't expecting. I do like the way repeated phrases change their meaning.
Yep.
Or can be reinterpreted throughout a script or a play, especially if, you know, as the actors and the characters evolve into them or the audience changes their understanding. I love that. So, you know, there's a thing that happens in the play where characters will speak as if a monologue by themselves, a scene that then you then watch with another character, almost like they're remembering something that's about to happen. And that, I think, has a musical quality to it. I think what I look for are the same things that, you know, I don't know music theory, I'm not a musician. You know, maybe more like, you know, when you hear a good poem, how the structure of a poem has a sort of audio quality that is undefinably correct, you know, has alliteration, has, you know, counterpoint, has all the things that shape a good poem. I feel like I look to make a dramatic version of that in some way, maybe.
in the world of the play.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you can dance around this.
Yeah.
But like, what are they hearing? There's a reference to.
Do you hear that? Yeah.
And what are they hear? How would you
describe that?
If I'm just going to be a jerk and really be like,
say, tell me what your play is
about.
What's
going on?
Like, which is totally not what I mean. I kind of want to make you. I would be curious to hear what you have to say about that device in the show.
I mean, for me, I'll be completely honest. When we started the concept, it was more like, let's create something that might cause people to be afraid. And then, you know, and there's a nameless thing out there. But then as it evolved, I found that, as the script evolved, I found that it was important for me to clearly define a mythology and write within the framework of that mythology and be able to communicate that to the actors. Because the actors will force you to come up with reasons for things. They can't just act, it sounds good. It's just not possible, not really. I mean, they can try, but nobody wants to watch that, and they don't want to do that. So, you know.
Pesky actors.
No, they actually want motivation and character.
Yeah, exactly.
Jerks. No, they're amazing. I'm so blessed with this amazing cast, you know. And they never.
Yeah, very great cast. And you said Heather Cunningham. I was like, that was Heather? I didn't even recognize her.
Oh, yeah?
Completely unrecognizable.
Yeah, from Retro.
Yeah.
Yeah, she is just a phenomenal actor, and we asked her to come in and do this part. This basically, like, just bisect the play with this monologue.
Yep.
And she's like, great, I'm in, you know. I do have a very, you know, a clear mythology about what's happening to them. And I think, you know, I don't want to maybe just spell it out, but what I will say is it's a real phenomenon.
Don't spell it out.
I won't. But I would say, I think there's a real phenomenon that they're experiencing and they don't understand it entirely, right? And so, like any of us do, and so they're responding to this thing that they don't entirely understand but know is physically affecting them or mentally affecting them, or something is happening to them, and there appears to be a time limit on that thing. Here it comes. You know, there's a point in the play when they rush to get something accomplished because
you're running out of time.
Sound is, you know, building or reappearing more often or whatever it's doing. And so I think that sound is, you know, they refer to, is it a hum? Sometimes we hear overlapping voices. You know, it's something that, it's a phenomena that is affecting them, you know, in a consistent way. And the audience, we as an audience, hear it in a translatable way for an audience.
Yeah.
I probably would guess that what they're feeling or hearing is not the same thing that we do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the way I wanted you to answer that
question. Okay, there you go.
Awesome.
Well, that's exactly right.
I'm glad I didn't phrase it in too terrible a way.
No, that's right. I mean, yeah, I think we get the exterior version of what they're probably internally experiencing.
Because there's definitely a different sort of world going on in this little box.
Yeah.
Of which I'm sitting in, which is kind of awesome. Perks of being a podcaster, I suppose. So what's next for Matt Freeman?
I have a couple of plays that are new that have not been produced that I'm trying to find the right place for. After this show and Why We Left Brooklyn, I was kind of co-producer on this and co-producer on Why We Left Brooklyn, and I probably want to take a little break from producing and just be a playwright. That would be fun. So I'm sending scripts out, and you know, my newest play that I wrote like a couple of months ago is nigh on to unproducible on a small scale. It's called The Starving Dress, and I think it has like 46 characters or something, and that's a huge accident. I shouldn't have done it, but
dream big, brother.
Yeah, why not? And that has a very similar quality to this. It has a very musical quality. So I'm enjoying. My friend Mark was like, "You're in a blue period." It's you know, like where I'm playing with language a lot. So I'm just gonna keep going for it and having fun with it and doing what I enjoy. It's fun. And I'm lucky enough to continue to hopefully work with a lot of these performers who are so terrific. Yeah.
Excellent. Good luck finding a home for that dress show.
Yeah, the next piece. Wow. Yeah. And thank you so much for coming out to.
Oh man, happy to do so. Like it's like I said, I really enjoyed Why We Left Brooklyn, and this is very much more like the sort of stuff that I'm drawn to as an artist myself, like what I would love to act in and direct. So
great.
This was a treat. Thank
great.
You so much.
Thank you for coming, man.
Of course, man.
All right, take care.
Dig it.
Thank you, Matt, for joining me again on the mic and for letting me check out that really cool set. You can catch The Listeners for a few more performances following the posting of this episode. Tonight, Thursday, February 12th, tomorrow, Friday, February 13th, and Saturday, February 14th, 2015, all at 8 p.m. at The Brick, 579 Metropolitan Avenue in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Head to bricktheater.com, and that's theater with an E-R, for tickets and more information. Thanks to you for listening into the podcast. If you dig it, please give it a like on Facebook, facebook.com/GoSeeAShow. Follow at GoSeeAShow on Twitter and rate or comment on the show's iTunes page. Until next time, go see a show.
See?
There you go. Awesome.